Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 30, Omega Factor. I am one of your co-hosts, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, jolly old Chris Slate.
Ho, ho, hello.
And we are back once again to talk about Nintendo. This is kind of going to be a special episode, a year-in-review episode. We're going to talk about the big happenings in 2015, talk about the best games, talk about our favorite games. But before we get into that, we are going to jump into some news. And the fact of the matter is, at this time of year, it's a pretty slow news week, but there was some really cool stuff involving Mario Maker that just came out.
Yeah, as we're recording this, and the latest update for Mario Maker just went live, and they've added the three new elements, the kind of fire-blasting clown copter, the bouncy kind of a donut inner tube things, and the P-Switch doors. So not to mention the web browser-based extra search functionality.
You just mentioned it. What do you mean not to mention? You're crazy.
So it was awesome to see all that stuff finally show up, and they've even announced some more character costumes on the way for the rest of this month as well. The Excitebike guy, Birdo from Super Mario Brothers
2. Yeah, that's pretty rad.
Yeah, that is. And Captain Toad, a favorite of mine. So, you know, Super Mario Maker is in the giving mood, and it is the giving season.
Yeah, pretty awesome. Have you had a chance to fool around with that stuff very much yet?
Yeah, a little bit. I've spent the most time actually browsing stuff online, and it must be working because I've been able to straight away just looking at the levels that they recommended and also doing some searches based on the criteria I put in, such as, you know, I'm not looking for, you know, autoplay levels and stuff like that. I was able to very quickly find a couple of levels that I was really impressed with.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I bookmarked them on my web browser, and then I went to my Wii U, and they were already there ready for me to play. And then I even tried, you know, going through the game itself without going to my computer. I was able to access the Wii U's web browser and find a game, and then find a level, and then immediately start playing it.
Yeah, I turned it on this morning myself, and you know, I didn't do it from my computer or anything. I went straight from the game, went into the web browser directly from Super Mario Maker. And, you know, it would have been better if it was, you know, more tightly integrated into Mario Maker. But, hey, at least you can access this, you know, straight from the game software. And, you know, you don't have to go to a separate, app to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it works pretty seamlessly, even though it's obvious you're being kicked out to the web browser. Mm-hmm. You come right back, and it's not like there's long load times or anything.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I was able to, you know, take a look at some of the new search options. I kind of wish I could just filtered out certain kinds. Like, I didn't notice that there was a way to just, like, you know, say everything on, you know, hard difficulty except for autoplay levels and music levels. And I guess now that I say that, there wouldn't be anything that's hard that's an autoplay level or a music level. But okay, let's say normal or easy difficulty that's not an autoplay level or a music level. I just want to see all of those. I don't think you could do that as far as I could tell.
Not that I could tell either, although there could be some tricks I've yet to uncover. But speaking of difficulties, one thing that I thought was really neat and unexpected was that I can see for each level that's in the web browser, it labels it with exactly what difficulty it is.
Oh, cool.
You know, there's easy, normal, expert, and also super expert. And I didn't realize
yes.
There were two different categories. And the cool thing is I got to see the levels that I'd actually made, what difficulty the game considers those to be, which I'd never been able to, you know, find that information before.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. And something must be, you know, going right for myself and probably a lot of other people too, because just since this browser has gone live, this advanced search, I've gotten like 100 stars in almost a day. So,
oh wow, well, aren't you special?
So it's definitely benefiting me, and I would imagine benefiting a lot of people. Could partly be just be because, you know, the game's brought a lot of attention back to itself now that everyone wants to try this new function out.
Well, it could be, but I mean, that's something that you'd been saying for a long time. You know, I said that in jest, you know, just a minute ago, but your levels are really, really good. But it was kind of hard to find them because, you know, it seemed like everything that appeared at the top of the charts was like an autoplay level or a music level. And, you know, your stuff, you know, should have been there, but it was a little hard to discover. So, yeah, I would say it is working if, you know, more people are able to check out your stages. It's been a long time since I've made a level. I've been meaning to get back to it for a long, long time. I think finally with this update and with the upcoming holidays, I'll be able to finally get back into it, and hopefully I'll be able to make some cool stuff as well. You know, I think the best one I made was that last one I did, which was the airship stage, but I haven't had a chance to, you know, go back and improve upon that yet. So I'm looking forward to getting back into it.
Yeah, definitely. I want you to get in there and make some more levels because I want to play them.
Yep, that is the plan. Well, like I said, there isn't too much else going on in news right now, but this being the end of the year, I thought maybe we could take a look back at some of the biggest stories of 2015.
Yeah, it was a really interesting year for Nintendo overall. I mean, it was kind of a mix of some not so good news and some really fun stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, we've talked about this on the show many times. This year for the most part was a bit of a, well, not a bit of a pretty significant drought in software.
Yep, you know, that is true.
And we discovered this as we were looking over the games to pick our winners that we're going to be talking about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But, there was a couple handfuls of really amazing stuff and then really not much else. And, so it was kind of a down year for Nintendo in that way. But when you look at all the cool DLC that came out for so many different games and just how exciting the games that were good, how great they were and game-changing in some ways, it doesn't feel like, you know, it was a year in which we only got maybe, you know, a dozen, you know, notable Nintendo games.
Well, I think that's all true. But in spite of that, I would have to say that, you know, one of the biggest stories of the year, unfortunately, you know, was that some of the big titles were delayed. Zelda was supposed to be a big marquee title mm-hmm. for this year, and it got pushed into, we believe, next year. But, that was going to be okay because we had Star Fox to come in and swoop down and take us through the holidays. And then that got delayed as well.
Yeah, that was almost comical with how that went down.
That's actually why they called it Star Fox Zero, because it gave us Zero to play in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, it's God bless Super Mario Maker, because if that game hadn't come out when it did, there really would have been nothing of note, for this whole last part of the year. And that Super Mario Maker in any year is, I think, a worthy title to close the year out on. But just imagine in a world where we would have gotten that and then Star Fox Zero and then Zelda Wii U.
In a world where Star Fox and Zelda came out.
I mean, that would have really turned this year around in a major way. But, you know, at the very least, you can always say, well, it gives us something to look forward to next year, especially, you know, as we move toward the next system, the NX. We're not entirely sure how many great big Wii U games we're still going to get. We at least got two on the way.
But that was actually another, one of the big stories of the year is that Nintendo has been, teasing their next system a bit. They're teasing the NX. We still don't really know when it's going to be coming out. There are a lot of rumors pointing to next year. They're certainly going to be talking about it next year. There's new Nintendo hardware on the way, and that's always fun and exciting.
Yeah, I can't imagine it won't come out next year. Because it wouldn't be unlike Nintendo historically to give you a first glimpse at an E3 and then, still have another year to go.
I mean, that's usually what they do, but in this case, I don't really expect that to happen.
No, it really does feel like, I mean, you can feel that the tide's been pulling out and pulling out on the current generation throughout this year. And you're just expecting that kind of NX wave to come crashing back to shore next year. I mean, it's really just feels like it's in the air. Can you imagine a whole other year with just Wii U and 3DS? And as much as
I can't imagine it because I lived through the Wii.
Exactly. And I hope Nintendo learns from its past mistakes because, those last, I would even say 2 years of the Wii with maybe one or two exceptions were just a wasteland.
And they were pretty bad.
You think about how big and successful the Wii was leading up to that, and then they just kind of killed it in the end.
I think they were just expecting that success to last forever, but after 3 years it kind of fizzled out and they were not prepared, and so they were scrambling, I think, to try to get another system ready, and they just weren't ready. Whereas I think in this case, I think they are preparing and they are getting ready, and I think that's part of why there was a drought this year, is because they're shifting their resources over to NX probably, and so they want to make sure that they have something really good to deliver whenever it hits.
Yeah, totally. And, just to go back to the kind of original point, NX was a big story this year, even though Nintendo really never said more than one sentence about it, which just goes to show how, crazy Nintendo fans like us can get about a new system.
And actually, the whole reason that NX came up was because Nintendo was saying that they're actually going to do something that people have been asking for a long, long time, and that is they are going mobile.
Yeah, that was major news, obviously. And since then, we've learned that their first mobile game will be Miitomo next year. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think back on it, but at the beginning of this year, you know, Nintendo, I believe, was still a company that seemed, you know, firm with its assertion that it would never do mobile games. And man, what a change that's been.
Seemed to mean a lot to investors that they're going to be doing that. When they announced the delay, that had a bit of a negative impact, but it's clear that people are paying attention, and it's something that at least the investors are really, really happy to see. And looking at what they're offering, it's not like they're sacrificing their traditional games to make this happen. They're doing something that's distinct and unique for the mobile market.
Yeah, it really seems like they've gone about it the right way. And if I time traveled back and told myself at the beginning of this year that, hey, Nintendo's getting into mobile gaming, I would have been pissed. I would have been scared. But they've really seemed to go out of their way to reassure the fans that, look, it's really mostly about just directing people back to our core business, which is always going to be dedicated game systems. But if we can go out and do the mobile as well, why not? And especially if the mobile apps are going to be something that really is built for the platform. It doesn't feel so far at all like it's encroaching really on the kind of Nintendo games that we've grown up loving at all.
Yeah, and don't forget, they're also involved with Pokemon Go. I don't think they're the publisher on that, but they're involved with making the hardware that you'll be using to track down these Pokemon if you're not using your actual mobile phone. And that's fairly huge as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, again, back to the point I made earlier, for a year that, wasn't Nintendo's best year as far as outputting lots of, software, they just had a lot of exciting announcements and just things going on in so many different ways. It just feels like change is in the air. And I always get, super excited when Nintendo starts to get a little crazy and creative.
And speaking of exciting non-software products, this was definitely the year of Amiibo.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about this in length a couple of episodes ago. But
we sure did.
But, just think, again, in a year that didn't have a lot of software, Amiibo really dominated kind of the Nintendo news for the whole year.
Yeah, I mean, every couple of months, it's, tons of new Amiibo, tons of new classic characters coming out. Our whole issue with standing in lines, lots of other people standing in lines and trying to get our mitts on these things because they were just so darn popular. And, finally, a lot of them are readily available, but, still hard to get certain characters here in the United States. Still can't get a darn Lucina, still can't get a darn Mega Yarn Yoshi.
Yeah, that's the only one that I haven't been able to snag, Mega Yarn Yoshi. I'm going to wait until after Christmas when hopefully maybe some of the import prices come down even further and then bite the bullet.
But there were some that came out towards the end of last year. I think 18 came out last year. So that means there must have been about 60 different Amiibo that came out in 2015. So yeah, that was certainly a big reason to get out there and keep on buying Nintendo stuff.
Yeah. And it's it really plays well to Nintendo's new strategy going forward, which is to keep reinforcing the value of its IP, keep building that value, keep its characters in front of people, and keep people interacting with them even when new games aren't coming out. It's just a really smart strategy, and I'd like to see them to continue to refine it. I mean, we heard from Kimishima in a recent interview that he doesn't believe that they've done a very good job with what the Amiibos actually do in-game. And I have to agree with him, but so far, just as someone who loves Nintendo and loves collecting these things, I haven't had any real big complaints. It's been great almost from the outset. They've done a great job with those.
Well, the fact that trying to track them all down is tending to give me an ulcer or something along those lines. I do have a complaint about that, but I love the product.
You're right about that. Yeah, the product, I guess I meant. Yeah, it's been a rocky road as far as actually getting your hands on them.
And I guess it all ties into, another, bit of Nintendo's narrative this year, which was, early on, they, were coming back from, some of their worst financial reports ever. They were reporting losses, which is really unusual for them. But, you know, they went through that, they persevered, they, you know, started doing things really smart when it came to DLC and Amiibo, and the result is they are profitable again. They were profitable with their last financial report. And, you know, that, you know, doesn't say anything to the how the whole fiscal year is going to turn out. But, hey, it's a good story for them so far. You know, things are definitely looking up.
And there have been some reports here recently that year on year, their sales are up for 3DS and Wii U, I believe, you know, depending on the month. So so it all seems to be trending in the right direction for them. You know, of course, a big part of what has helped them is the exchange rate between the Japanese yen and the U.S. dollar has really been in their favor, and that's added quite a bit to their becoming profitable again. But the main thing going forward is you just hope they're able to do a better job managing the transition from this generation to the next. Like we were saying, unlike with the last platform where there was this just massive chasm in between the two generations.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that you know, no year in review would be complete without mentioning that, of course, this was when the Nintendo president Satoru Iwata passed away tragically back in July, and of course a new president, as you know, just alluded to, Mr. Kimishima, became the new president of Nintendo.
Yeah, obviously there's no doubt this was the biggest Nintendo story of the year. It's just, you know, not one that's very fun to kind of revisit.
Yeah, indeed.
But man, we've said it on this show, and it's been said, you know, it's been heartwarming how much we've seen the support, you know, from not just the Nintendo fan community, but from, you know, all gamers and even beyond gaming. I've seen a lot of really nice tributes to...
great outpouring of support.
Yeah, to a man, you know, and we'll never see the like of him again, you know, at Nintendo or in the games industry. He was one in a million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even, you know, I remember seeing, you know, stuff on, you know, social media from Sony and I think Xbox as well. And, you know, I don't think that anyone is going to, you know, elicit that kind of support.
Yeah, it's cool to see because, you know, Iwata was not at all the kind of the image of the cutthroat kind of, you know, corporate exec. And, you know, he very much embodied, you know, what is great and really what is beautiful about gaming and the gaming industry. You know, he really was an example of this industry at its best.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I think this is where we're going to take a little intermission, and when we come back, we will talk about our top favorite games of the year. All right, we are back, and we are here to present the first annual Power Pros Game of the Year Awards.
Awards, awards, awards.
Otherwise known as the Nesters. Can we do that? Can we call them the Nesters? No, we probably can't. I think that's probably been used by somebody else. I can't remember who.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So we're going to count down our top five games of the year in just a little bit here. But before we do that, we're going to start off with some categorical awards. And Chris Slate and I have not talked over exactly who the winners are going to be in these categories. The choices might differ, so we're going to, you know, duke it out a little bit here. And we're going to kick it off with Best Graphics.
Best Graphics. All right. Well, I have a pick, but first I want to say that I felt kind of a nostalgic pull to vote for Super Mario Maker, just because I love seeing those retro graphics, and I kind of love, you know, if those graphics were just a, you know, if I could weave them into a blanket, I would just wrap myself up in the warmest, toastiest NES nostalgia blanket ever.
I think that probably exists. You're probably just not looking in the right place.
Maybe somewhere on Etsy. But
yes.
But you know, this category historically has always been, you know, in Nintendo Power and other books, has always been more of kind of a technical achievement in a lot of ways, more often than not. So I'm going to give it to Xenoblade Chronicles X, just because it's hard to believe that such a big, expansive world as that, you know, is even run up and running on a Wii U.
Well, that's a good choice. Xenoblade does look gorgeous. You know, it has these really vast worlds. It has this, you know, very appealing anime art style that I like. But I think I'm actually going to give it to Yoshi's Woolly World. You know, it has that, you know, really, you know, beautiful and, you know, innovative, sort of innovative. It's not quite as innovative since, you know, Kirby's Epic Yarn already came out and did the same thing. But it's got this really beautiful textile style that, you know, looks, you know, super realistic in one sense, but, you know, totally fantastic in another. And I just really like the way it looks in high def on Wii U. So I think I'm going to give it to Yoshi's Woolly World myself, but Xenoblade a close second.
Well, I would definitely say that Yoshi's would be up there. I think the HD really makes a huge difference in kind of selling that art style. And I almost wish that Kirby's Epic Yarn that we hadn't seen that before, because I feel like this is such a
It kind of cheapens it a little bit, you know.
It does, because this is such a much better representation of that style that had it come out, you know, without Kirby's Epic Yarn having been seen, I think it would have had that same impact that, you know, Yoshi's Island had back on the Super NES, where it was just this, you know, really kind of brand new, you know, creative look. And not to say that it isn't still creative or kind of, it still is a bit fresh. There's only, you know, been one other game that looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe diminished a tiny bit because of Kirby's Epic Yarn. But yeah, bottom line, I second your vote. I wouldn't put it as my number one, but maybe it's a number two or three.
All right, then. Next, best music. What's your pick?
That's a tough one, too. And again, I'm such a Mario fanatic. I keep coming back to Mario Maker, and I say, well, it's got some of the, you know, best Mario music ever. And the way that they kind of use it in the game is very creative when you know, kind of go back and forth between, you know, course creation and playing the game and how instruments drop in and out and things like that. Definitely some of the coolest, most innovative sound design, I guess you would say. But strictly thinking of, you know, music and especially kind of like fresh music that we haven't already heard, you know, in various forms over and over again, I'm going to go with Splatoon because...
Ooh, fresh.
Exactly. It is very fresh. Stay fresh. And it has the... it has some of the freshest, you know, kind of new styles to it. And much like the art design of that game, you know, Nintendo came out of nowhere with that title and really established something that I feel like we're going to be hearing those themes and variations on that soundtrack, you know, every generation now. I'm sure we're going to get another Splatoon. And I feel like you can really see why that's going to happen right here at the outset, because what they put out was just so, you know, awesome and memorable. And, you know, especially that title track that you kind of hear. You know,
yeah, I really, really like that title track.
Yeah, it fits the game perfectly. It's amazing music to listen to while you're actually running around splatting people.
Yeah, I mean, because of that title music, I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe that would be my pick as well. But you know, when I played the rest of the game, it didn't quite live up to that title song. So my pick is going to be Xenoblade Chronicles X. You picked it for graphics. I picked it for music. You know, I got the soundtrack for the game before, you know, several months before the game came out. And, you know, I was listening to it and, you know, I like it. It's a very eclectic mix. You know, some of it is, you know, like super orchestral with the vocals. Some of it is like, you know, totally hip hop. But it wasn't really clicking with me until I played the game. Once I saw it all in context, it really, really works even better. And it has these great hymns for when you're running around. And, you know, the hip-hop stuff tends to be more in the towns. I think it all comes together really, really well. And that is my pick for best music, best soundtrack.
Well, it's certainly interesting. I still haven't played enough hours of that game to really get my head around it. And I haven't listened to the soundtrack separately like you have. So I don't know that I would agree with you yet, but I don't necessarily disagree either. I will just say that so far I'm finding that soundtrack to be one of the more interesting soundtracks I've heard in a while. Because like you said, I think the key word there really is eclectic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. But it's also really, really good. All right, next category. Best multiplayer.
Splatoon, come on. It's the first game Nintendo's made that really almost has to be played multiplayer to really get the most out of it. And it really just turned the first person shooter genre on its ear.
It's third person.
I mean, it's essentially a first person shooter, but yeah, you're right. You're playing it third person.
I mean, I have to give it up to that as well. You know, I'm not really an online multiplayer shooter fan in the slightest, but there's no doubt that this did amazing things for the genre. You know, I kind of want to give it to The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes, but you know, I've actually had some, you know, problems with that online. And there are some balance issues that I still think need to be worked out. So I will wholeheartedly support you and give that category to Splatoon.
Yeah, and I think the bottom thing with, or the bottom line rather, with Splatoon is I can't think of another Nintendo game, really, even looking back, you know, decades, other than Mario Kart, that has online multiplayer that's that addictive. That is, you know, where you just kind of pop, you know, a match is like candy. You just can't put it down. So, yeah, Splatoon, best multiplayer, easy.
All right, next category. Best eShop exclusive.
You know, I haven't played them all, but I'm going to go with, I'm going to champion here a game that I've been trying to get some more attention on all year, and that's Box Boy for 3DS.
Box Boy.
Yeah, I love that game. It's that, you know, it's got that retro kind of black and white Game Boy look. The gameplay is a little bit action, but mostly puzzle, and it's kind of short and sweet, but there's a little bit maybe more there than you'd initially think. And I actually took that on a vacation to Disneyland, and as much as I love Disneyland, some of my fondest memories of that trip is when I'd get back to the hotel at night and rest and play that game.
All right, that is not my pick. My pick is going to 3D Streets of Rage 2, and I really like, you know, almost everything that Sega has done with these enhanced classic ports on the Nintendo 3DS. And they had some really good ones this year. They had Sonic 2. They had Gunstar Heroes. But my favorite of the group is Streets of Rage 2. You know, it's still got everything that made the original great. It's still got the great co-op and has spectacular use of 3D. All three of those games have spectacular use of 3D. But because you know, Streets of Rage, it was all about, you know, moving in and out of the screen. I mean, it was sort of, you know, pseudo 3D gameplay even back then. It works, you know, perfectly on the Nintendo 3DS. I think it's a fantastic game, and I love punching people in the face. So that's my pick.
I'd also like to give a real quick shout out to Pokemon Picross, which I've been getting more and more into.
Yeah, I've been playing that a lot recently too.
Yeah.
Still not enamored with the free to play aspects of it, but yeah, it's a great game.
Yeah, I mean, Picross by itself is pretty awesome, so it's hard to go too wrong with that.
All right, best add-on content or best DLC, which game wins this category?
I struggled with this one. This was one of the toughest categories for me because I think one of the other kind of overarching things that we saw from Nintendo this year was them really investing, you know, full on with their DLC. You know,
this is true. This is very true. They did it well in a lot of games, but for me, it was easy. I pick Smash Brothers.
That was what I went with at the end too. I mean, they've released Rue, Roy, Lucas, Mewtwo, Cloud, lots of stages, you know, endless Mii costumes. You know, they've really extended the life of that game in
they
a
have.
Great way with some amazing content. And it's hard now to imagine that game without a lot of these characters. But I also, the reason it was so tough was because, I mean, look at Splatoon. I mean, not only has Splatoon gotten constant regular DLC maps, weapons, you know, but it's all been free. They haven't charged for anything.
Mm-hmm.
They're even supporting it, you know, with those, you know, special weekend events and things like that. And then, you know, let's think back to earlier in the year, Mario Kart 8 DLC pack number 2, you know, a whole new cup, you know, new characters, new kart pieces. You know, put both DLC packs together, and I don't know that there's been any DLC better, but I believe the original pack came out last year. So, like I say, it was tough. And then Shovel Knight, Plague of Shadows was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm just now getting into that.
Good selection as well, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it just shows how amazing, you know, Sakurai has been with his content for Smash Brothers that it trumps them all.
Yeah, to be honest, they could just keep pumping out new characters for Smash Brothers month after month, and I would probably continue to be very excited about it.
I'll tell you what, when we have our next Nintendo digital event or direct or whatever it is, and there's no video that begins with that flaming cross, mm-hmm. I'm going to be pretty damn sad.
Yeah, it will be. It'll be a little bit sad. Okay, next category, best new character.
Well, to me, that's another easy one. I'm going with the Inklings.
I can understand why you would make that choice. But I am going with I don't actually know his name. I'm going with the Bunny Rabbit from Badge Arcade.
What is wrong with you? You're going out of your way to not show love to Nintendo's.
The rabbit is awesome. And I have a backstory for him. Because every time I play that game and I see Badge Arcade, I read it as Bad Gear Cade. So I'm assuming that his name is Cade. And he was in a gang called Bad Gear. And he was a real troublemaker until the owner of this arcade took him in and forced him to work under these slave labor conditions that he's always under. But no, he's a great character. He's, you know, always talking games with you. He goes into his weird super buff rage mode. He can have his own game where he goes into super buff rage mode. He'd be like the next Altered Beast or something like that. he gets those little doe eyes sometimes when he's talking about stuff. I love him. He's great.
Yeah, he wants your money more than Tom Nook. That's all he talks about is, hey, give me your money.
Want our money. This is very, very true.
I agree that he's cute, and I was happy to get him as a new costume in Mario Maker not too long ago, but come on. Inklings. Inklings should have been in Smash Brothers as well. I'm all for the Inklings.
I think Cade should have been in Smash Brothers now, man.
Well, I'm just gonna leave you to finish writing that fan fiction.
He could be hanging out right there with Bowser Jr. and Roy.
If they start kissing, I'm out of here.
Anyway, our next category, best power-up or weapon. Let me lead off with this one.
Uh-huh.
My pick is the Mystery Mushroom from Super Mario Maker.
Oh, yeah, that's obvious, isn't it? I was sitting here trying to think, well, which Splatoon weapon is my favorite? Because
that was kind of where I went first, and I was thinking, you know, there's some cool weapons there. You know, the roller is pretty sweet, but no, the Mystery Mushroom. It gives you like 120 different outfits to turn Mario into, you know, whether it's just Luigi or it's Chibi Robo or it's, mascot characters from Japan that a lot of people have never heard of.
It really is like the ultimate Nintendo fan service, all those unlockable Mystery Mushroom costumes. So, yeah, I'm going to steal your idea.
Mega Man and Mario. Jeez.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But I'm going to steal your idea and go with that as well. That was seeing which costumes were hidden in there and playing some unexpected characters was like the second best thing to getting new Smash Brothers character reveals all year.
Yep. A wise choice. A wise choice you have made. Next category. Best surprise of the year. What would you say?
Cloud and Smash Brothers, the reveal.
I will have to totally agree with you. When they did that, you know, it had been, you know, very, very quiet out there in Nintendo Land for many, many months. And they came out with the Nintendo Direct and they showed Cloud, a character who I never in a million years
would have guessed would be in
there. And, he's, you know, such a classic, memorable character, and it, you know, totally blew me away. That was super exciting.
And it hadn't leaked. I mean, the last round.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, Rue would have been an amazing surprise as well, but it leaked, and we all knew that he and Roy were going to be in the game, but there was no whisper that Cloud was on the way.
Yeah, Cloud Strife, best surprise of the year, giving it to him over the reveal of Metroid Federation Force. Yep, it's true.
That definitely was a surprise, just not of the best variety.
Now, here's a category that we started doing in our last few years at Nintendo Power, the Finish Strong Award. It is an award that we would give out to the game that just, you know, comes in with a climactic moment or ending that really knocks our socks off. And let's do that again here in Power Pros. Who is the winner of this category?
Well, it's another one in the bag for Splatoon, I think. If you're talking about the single player missions, that final boss that actually has several different kind of parts to it, that battle, and just seems to go on and on and on and keeps getting cooler and cooler. And I remember hearing, or rather reading, in I believe one of the final Iwata Asks interviews, The team talking about how they probably spent way too much time on that final boss, but they just got,
that's right.
They got so into it. And I'd read that before I got to it, so I was excited to see what they'd done. And you can really tell that they put a lot of love into it. And I think that's what we wanted to recognize with this award, you know, back in the Nintendo Power days, was that, you know, most people focus all their, you know, development time and energy on the first level or the first, you know, chunk of the game. And they feel like, you know, everyone's going to play those parts, but not as many people will get to the end. So sometimes they just kind of, you know, the end is falls a little bit flat. But when it's done right, like it is with Splatoon, you can really tell that that they cared enough to go that extra mile.
Yeah, it is pretty epic, and I second you wholeheartedly. I think it is another award well-deserved for Splatoon. That takes care of our categorical awards. I think we are gonna jump in to our countdown of the top five overall best games of the year to appear on Nintendo systems.
Yeah, and this is a list we actually have put our heads together on prior to this podcast.
That is right. So here we go. Number five, Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Yeah, as I said earlier, I still have a long, long way to go in this game, but it's already clear that just the sheer kind of scale and ambition of it and just how it's pulling me in already. It's you know, obviously one of the year's top games.
Yeah, this is one I'd really, really been looking forward to. And just like you, I haven't quite been able to, you know, get in as deep as I would have liked to. I mean, it'd be great if I could come here and say, yes, I beat this game. It is awesome and it's fantastic. But, you know, so far I'm definitely enjoying it. You know, this world is, you know, beautiful and, you know, just begs to be explored. And, you know, certainly I may come back in a few months and be like, oh, man, this Xenoblade Chronicles should have been our number one game, not our number five game. But I think, you know, even being number five is pretty worthy. And, yeah, a lot of fun so far. Seems to have a ton of depth. And, you know, I'm so glad to finally be playing it.
Yeah, and it really was a unique game for Nintendo this year as well. If you think about the rest of their output in 2015, there really was nothing, you know, even remotely like it.
All right, then. Number four, Yoshi's Woolly World.
Yeah. This is another game that I've put a ton of time into, but because I've been meticulous in you know, getting perfect basically on every level, getting 100% completion before I move on to the next world.
Yeah, gotta get all those collectibles, man.
Exactly. I still have like a world to go, and I'm really looking forward to getting back at it over the holiday break. But, you know, the Yoshi's Island series has had its ups and downs. Especially with the last game for 3DS, New Yoshi's Island, which was pretty divisive. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it's divisive. I've yet to meet someone who really loved that game, although I did enjoy it. But it was nice to see, in any case, that Woolly World was a bit of a return to form.
Yes, exactly. Just what I was going to say.
Yeah, not exactly like the originals, but definitely you can see that it's you know, from that same DNA, but they've just taken it.
Yeah, it's got that spirit that they originally had, and it's just a really, really solid, fun, beautiful platformer.
Yeah, and like all the best platformers, the star in this game really is level design. You know, even this far into the game that I am already, I'm like, at least I think I have one more world to go. There's just constantly changing things up. You know, you're still encountering levels that have brand new elements, brand new enemies. And, you know, I love to see that kind of variety in a big Nintendo platformer.
Yeah, and lots of, you know, cool, clever stuff you can do with the, you know, the various type of textiles, whether you're, you know, unbuttoning, you know, different pieces of cloth, you're throwing balls of yarn to create platforms. There's always something fun going on. And, you know, I just, you know, like I said before, I love the look of it. It's so cool that, you know, instead of the eggs, he's got, you know, the yarn balls behind him that he uses to take out enemies. And just a lot of, you know, fun stuff with that. You know, transformations are back. All that good stuff. Just, yeah. You know, very, very well-made platformer, like I said.
And at least in one way, I even prefer it to the original Yoshi's Island, and that's that you don't have to carry around crying baby Mario and kind
of that's right.
Watch after him the whole time.
That is a very, very good point. I kind of forgot about that. But yes, point well made. All right. Number three, Splatoon.
Yeah. I don't know that I can say too much more. I've already kind of sung its praises so much on this show, but you know, it is that much, much needed kind of burst of new energy, you know, a kind of brand new IP, you know, for modern times.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of revolutionary. It's kind of, you know, getting people excited and interested again, you know, bringing in new audiences, things who thought that, you know, maybe Wii U doesn't have anything new to offer. Well, it sure does. Here's Splatoon. Check it out.
Yeah, and it's one of those things you just, it was so refreshing to see Nintendo make this game, because for so long, you know, as great as their games have been, they've become very predictable. And as much as I love the Mario games and the Mario characters, you know, it feels like in any other year, this game, Splatoon, would have had Mario characters starring in it. But somehow
that's
or another...
That's right. I mean, it so easily could have been, you know, people wearing floods on their backs.
Yeah, and early in development, it was at least considered. But you know, they took a chance on a relatively young team within Nintendo working on this, and brand new characters, brand new IP, brand new everything. And it was, they really hit a home run with it. I mean, I can't think of anything this powerfully new in a way that, you know, it's just setting the stage for so many great games in this franchise to come since, not counting the Miis, since Captain Olimar appeared in the first Pikmin game on GameCube. And even that game, I don't think made as big of an impact as Splatoon has made.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it has. So, yeah, it's really impressive to see, you know, cool game, cool characters. Yep. It's all good. All right, then. Number two, The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask 3D.
Yeah, this is a game that, you know, ever since Ocarina of Time 3D came out, everybody wanted to see Nintendo take the next logical step and put out Majora's Mask.
Yeah, they sure did.
And I personally
did.
Yeah, and I personally was really looking forward to this one because it is such a unique entry in the series, and I hadn't played it since it first came out on the N64. So, you know, I'd forgotten a lot of it, and I really wanted to revisit it and see what it is, you know, about it that has developed such, even within the Zelda kind of fandom, such a cult following.
Well, we got to see that, and we got to see it, you know, looking better than ever. You know, they really took things up by several notches with the enhanced visuals the 3DS can do. And, of course, it looks gorgeous in 3D. And, you know, they added, you know, a lot of, you know, helpful stuff, like the expanded Bomber's Notebook that, you know, really lets you try to figure out some of these trickier time-based puzzles on your own and try to, you know, figure out when you've, you know, really got these side quests in the bag, because that's such an important major part of this game, one of the things that makes it so special. Of course, the other thing that makes it special is that it's super creepy and you're like wearing dead people's faces all the time.
And posing as them.
Yeah, and people mistake you and you're like, eh, whatever, just yeah, keep pretending I'm your dead rock star fiancé or whatever it was.
And this is a game, too, that came out near the end of the N64's kind of relevancy. You know, people were familiar with it, obviously, but it wasn't the kind of historic smash hit, you know, kind of groundbreaking revolution that Ocarina of Time was. So there were a lot of fans that maybe had played Ocarina of Time even back in the day, but had skipped over this one or just missed it somehow. So it did seem like a natural game to bring back and allow to find a bigger audience.
Well, I don't know if that's true, because it certainly seemed like there's a lot of fans out there that really, really love it. But, you know, for whatever the reason, I'm glad it's back, and, you know, this is like, you know, the definitive version of it. So it's very cool and, you know, excellent game.
Yeah. You know, it's the best thing I can say about this version of the game is it's so good that I can't imagine ever going back to the original, and the original was a classic.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Our number one Power Pros Game of the Year, Super Mario Maker.
Kind of a no-brainer. Although although the you know, Majora's Mask and Splatoon, you could make an argument for those taking the top spot as well. But come on, Super Mario Maker. I've been dreaming about this game since I was a kid, being able to make my own Mario levels. And I never
would totally,
have,
me too.
And I never would have imagined they could have executed it so well that it would be so effortless to kind of just start playing around with these tools. And the act of creating a game is in itself kind of a game. And it's yet another Nintendo title that they've brought out this year that they just keep adding to and making better and better. Yeah, wow. Like I said before, even without a Zelda Wii U or, you know, a Star Fox Zero coming out this year, it didn't necessarily feel like we didn't get that big end of the year game, because it just really doesn't get any bigger than Super Mario Maker.
Well, let me tell you, I felt a little bit differently a few months back. I mean, I remember you saying, "Oh man, I'll bet this is going to be my game of the year. It's going to be so amazing." I'm like, "I don't know about that," because in a sense, it is more of a creative tool than it is a game. So I wasn't sure if it was really going to stack up as a game of the year contender. But the more I played, and the way that they keep delivering new content with the extra costumes and these additional courses for you to play, and the fact that there is just infinite content that you can just keep playing these custom-made levels forever and ever and ever, it just makes it so darn good, and it's presented so well, and they just give you such great tools to work with, and fantastic presentation that I was completely won over, and I'm like, yes, this is totally deserving as our pick for game of the year on Nintendo systems.
Absolutely. And my one kind of gripe about the game, the one thing that
no slopes.
Well, there's always stuff I'd love to see added, and slopes is top of the list. But my one kind of bone to pick with that game was that it's unavoidable. There's going to be a lot of garbage out there. There's a lot of amazing kind of future, game creators that we're seeing their very first work, come out here because it's that good. You just know these guys are destined for greatness. And then there's stuff that just, people are trolling you. They're putting invisible blocks above where you're supposed to jump. Or it's, God bless my 5-year-old son, and I love that he loves making levels, but I cringe a little bit when he puts some of them up online because I know somebody's going to have to play those. And,
I played them.
As great as they are, thank you, and he thanks you. But it's still, it's just all of the above. When you've got kids, when you've got novices, and you've got experts, you're going to get everything. And, it seems we just started fooling around with the new kind of advanced search options that came out today. And it seems like that's gone a long way toward, helping you cut through a lot of the crap. So, I'm excited. I hope that as we continue to maybe find even future faults in that they're able to continue to refine it and improve it, because that really was the only kind of niggling quibble I had with the game. Everything else is pretty much perfect.
Yeah, it's a really fantastic package. And the thing is that, just kind of, keeps getting better. We still have more costumes to unlock. There could still be more parts coming. We don't know. But, even if, the parts list is complete, it's still, a really, really, really great set of tools for making lots and lots and lots of fun levels.
Tell you what, if at any point next year they come out with DLC packs that give you new tile sets to where you can make a level look like it's a Metroid stage or a Zelda stage, then
crazy.
Then
talk.
If they were to do that, then screw whatever the rules are. I'm giving it game of the year next year too.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I think that's a show. That wraps up the first annual Power Pros Game of the Year Nestor Awards, or whatever I called it earlier. So I think that we are going to wrap it up. But before we go, it is time for another dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the Game Boy Advance game, Urban Yeti. Get ready to Yeti. Throughout time, the legend of the Yeti creature has been with us. No matter what you choose to call it, be it Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or Abominable Snowman, surely it must exist. But how has it evaded our scrutiny for so long? Is it possible that these creatures have been living among us for some time? Isn't it natural for them to want the same things we do? Do they crave the comforts of home and family? The time has come to find out. You must help Urban Yeti deal with the complexities of civilization so he can find a suitable mate.
God.
Real motion-captured Yeti. 4 unique city stages.
What?
Over 100 humans per level. Parallax background scrolling. Human AI adapts as you progress through the game. Play one of two ways. Smash your way through the city or go stealth and avoid detection altogether. Sound effects are so realistic, you can almost taste the city. 4 unique mini-games. Play a round of Yeti Frisbee. Manage the local Yeti Kingdom of Eats restaurant. Float down the lazy sewer river of fun. And catch poultry to impress your prospective mate.
You know what? I just heard you say what sounded like 1,000 words about that game, and I have no idea what kind of game it is. Is it a dating sim? Is it a platformer?
It's Urban Yeti, man. That's really all you need to know. Urban Yeti.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll call it a year. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow The Hoff on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and I'm at Chris Slate. Hoff has a cool blog called Still Playing With Power, and you should check it out at ChrisTheHoff.tumblr.com. You can email us at PowerProsPod@gmail.com, and as always, if you like the podcast, we'd love it if you could drop by and let us know at iTunes.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And our friend Bowser. We wish you a happy holidays, and we'll see you next time. A Christmas Visit from Mike Hagar. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and within Metro City, the Mad Gear gang kidnapped Jessica because they thought she was pretty. The mayor, Mike Hagar, was consumed by great worry. "Those punks kidnapped my daughter," he said in his fury. For too long had the gang filled the city with dread. Hagar vowed to bash open each gang member's head. Alongside Cody and Guy, he took to the street, where his enemies would feel his fists and his feet. They marched through the slums and made Jay's bones shatter. Then Hagar backdrop damned with a wondrous splatter. Masked Sodom was next. He attacked with a sword. But a few drop kicks later, he found himself floored. Then what did they spy near the city's west side? At a gas station parked was a gang member's ride. Using pipes, they destroyed it with the greatest of ease. "Oh, my car," sobbed the owner as he dropped to his knees. In a bar, they were ambushed and thrown in a cage, but their foes quickly fell before our hero's rage. And just to make sure Mad Gear knew who's on top, Hagar beat the crap out of a vicious rogue cop. To the industrial area the brave trio went, yet after pummeling Rolento, they were all but spent. Luckily, they knew how to prevent their defeat. They punched over a trash can and devoured the meat. In the bay, more punks struck, but they could not prevail. Hagar punched out the biggest, some jerk called Abigail. Upon reaching uptown, they knew their goal was near, as they found themselves facing the whole of Mad Gear. "It's Simmons, and Poison, and Axel, and Doug. There's Roxy, and 2P, and some lowly thug. Grab him," said Hagar. "Slam him into the wall. Now smash away, smash away, smash away all." Like water on rock, the Mad Gear were knocked back. They couldn't withstand Hagar's spinning attack. Guy leapt off the fence and kicked them in the face, while Cody's blows knocked all of their teeth out of place. The battle would go on forever, it seemed, but from a skyscraper above, poor Jessica screamed. Hagar quickly pursued the ear-shattering shriek to find his daughter with Belgar, Mad Gear's number one freak. "Hee hee hee, Mr. Hagar! Welcome to my show! It's me and your daughter, beneath the mistletoe! I've been lonely," mused Belgar, "but don't be misled. That will change once Jessica and I have been wed." Belgar's eyes, they were empty, like two lumps of coal. There's no doubt he was evil, right down to his soul. With one hand he held tightly to Jessica's wrist. In the other he clenched a crossbow in his fist. Hagar had seen enough. He'd no longer stand by. So he grabbed onto his foe and leapt into the sky. There was slim chance that Belgar would be a survivor as he felt the full force of Hagar's pile driver. Belgar's body was broken. His mind was aloof. He staggered and stumbled and slipped off the roof. But Hagar heard him scream as he fell out of sight. Merry Christmas to all, and to all, final fight.